The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.
Trash is picked up by Bobby Berwood.
He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Here are your hosts, Richard Fleming and Connor McGahee.
Greetings, Rapids chums and chumettes. Welcome to the latest Rapids podcast. Back home for one, now on the road again for two, with trips to Vancouver Whitecaps FC and then FC Dallas. We'll spend the next half hour looking towards those two games, as well as reacting to some of the big stories around the league, while also reflecting on the late drama in last Saturday's home game against New York City FC. And that's where we start.
Watts diving in, McNamara with a shot, and McNamara with the goal! 19 minutes gone, and Thomas McNamara, his third goal of the year, and I dare say he'll not score any better.
Villa dispossessed by Dom Baggi. Now Baggi's on the charge. Here comes Dom Baggi. Will it be goal number 8? Yes, it will! Dominic Baggi! Goal number 8 of the season. Goal number 1 tonight for the Rapids.
Another late goal from Dominic Baggi, who's been speaking with Richard Fleming.
Dom, you said at the start of the season, I know it's a conversation you've had, 8 goals at the moment, you want double digits. What has changed in your approach? What's changed in your game this season?
I think a lot of it just comes down to mentality. And confidence, honestly. I know that when I'm in the box, it's always an opportunity to get a shot on target. And so just being aggressive and forward-thinking and shoot on target and get goals.
As that confidence has grown, or as those goals tally has grown, has your confidence grown? In other words, you're getting into positions now, and with the goals comes confidence. With the confidence, you've got that ability to take on defenders. You've got that ability to have a shot on sight.
Yeah, definitely. Seeing the ball hit the back of the net is a great sight, and it gives me confidence every week to keep doing it during the weekends. So it's something that, you know, I'm definitely getting reps in practice, and something that I'm looking to come to fruition during the weekends.
Now, start of the season, double digits was the target. If you hit that, people are going to say, okay, you've raised the bar a little bit. What does 2018 hold in store for Dom Baggi?
Hey, I don't know what it holds yet, but for me, honestly, I hold myself to a higher standard than, you know, what everybody else does. So I know that I have a goal for this year, and next year it's going to be to get even more goals than this year. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I definitely plan on scoring goals.
And I imagine, you know, for a striker, for a lot of the players for the Rapids this season, it's been frustrating on a number of levels. But for you, you know, you've played out wide, you've played up top, and, you know, different formations. That instability in terms of positional and who you're playing alongside, that affects the kind of run that you can go on, that then obviously impacts on the confidence. Where do you prefer playing?
I prefer playing number 9. It's a position I've played my whole life. But honestly, you know, sometimes the team doesn't need me to play there. They need me to play on a wing, and I'm going to give you the best I can when I'm out there. But statistically speaking, I believe that I'm more productive when I'm the number 9.
What does the next level for you mean? Does it mean composure? Does it mean touch? Does it mean having that little trick in the bag that you can get past defender? Because you've got that natural ability. You've got that speed. What else do you think to get out to that 2018 target you need to work on?
Yeah, some areas I still need to work on are definitely composure. You know, with my speed, I get myself into great situations. And it's just taking a deep breath, looking up, and just getting the shot on target. Along with that, it's just that touch. You know, the first touch just sets you up for everything. So those are definitely areas that I'm looking to sharpen up.
And as you get better, defenders are going to do more homework. Is that kind of a cat and mouse game that you're beginning to understand? Is that as I get better, as I do well, people will focus on me. People will know my strengths and weaknesses. Are you always kind of looking to adapt and keep one step ahead?
Yeah. Always trying to, you know, keep the defenders guessing. And, you know, Connor Casey's done a great job with me where we sit down and just watch video. I know what the tendencies of, you know, the upcoming opponents are. And we always try to exploit those. And, you know, he's been hounding on just playing off the shoulders of defenders. That's something that they can't defend. So just being unpredictable and just playing off of them, and I'll get my chances.
Because somebody with natural speed, and I've often used the kind of the analogy of a tennis player with a big serve. If the big serve doesn't work, what do they fall back on? What do you fall back on? And maybe that's part of what you need to work on. If the other team is sitting deep and I can't get in behind, what other tricks do you have to bring to the table?
You know, once I can't use my speed, it's definitely hold-up ability. you know, it's something that I've been working on, something that I've been steadily getting better on, and, you know, it's going to take some time. It's going to require me to put on more weight, obviously, but it's something that I need to bring to my game to be a multi-dimensional player.
And having the players around, and I know you've got a wonderful relationship with Marlon and that kind of partnership, having that consistency, knowing... And also teammates knowing what your kind of traits are in terms of the runs that you're going to make. Is that beginning to become more kind of second nature?
Yeah. You know, the relationships we have with players out there is really important. You know, when we have a solid amount and a steady rotation going, we know what each other's tendencies are. And so when I have players on the wing that know the runs I like to make, that know where I am in the box, or the number 10s that, you know my movements, it makes my job easier and it makes their job easier too. So that's definitely relationships that we're looking to keep building on.
And the head, I mean, how much have you got to work on the heading ability? And as a striker, are you going to be that number 9? It's ball to the feet, back to goal, being able to run at defenders, and you might have to use the noggin every so often. How good is that?
Hey, you know, it's there. It's definitely something that look to work on. It just depends on where I find myself. You know, a lot of times I'm making the near post runs, and those are not balls that I usually get, but I definitely want to add that to my game to become a more complete player.
And in terms of the off season, are you going to get a chance to obviously relax is the one thing, but is that the kind of stuff that you prepare for during the off season, or can you adjust your game? Can you become a better player in front of goal in terms of composure? Is that sort of thing that you can work on during the season, or is it the sort of stuff that you got to do when it's a little calmer?
It's a bit of both. I think during the season it's more reps, just getting the reps down. Off season's when you can really sit down and analyze, you know, the whole season, watch video, and figure out, you know, technique more than anything. And this offseason, yeah, I plan on doing a lot. There's a lot of things that I want to bring to my game that I plan on working on. And heading is definitely something I'm going to sit down with. I have a couple coaches back home that we're really going to hound on.
And finally, you know, we spoke recently about you kind of dipping under the radar. And you were like, well, that's fine. I'm great dipping under the radar. But the flip side is, as you get more goals, you're going to be on the radar. Is that something that you're prepared for?
Hey, I always like a challenge. You know, this season, of course, under the radar, always been. But at the end of the day, I just like scoring goals. I don't know what's going to come with that, but I enjoy scoring goals, and I plan on scoring more goals. So I don't know what the future holds in terms of, you know, not being under the radar, but it doesn't really matter to me.
And this is where we're joined by the interviewer himself, Mr. Richard Fleming. Bodgy's having a decent season, isn't he? Suggested this week that he can be a top scorer in MLS for many years. Is that true or is that false?
Well, look, he's got great natural ability, hasn't he, with his speed. But one of the question marks that has surrounded Badji since his introduction to the league is his composure in front of goal. His touch is not always the cleanest. And I do think that the speed that he does have, he gets himself into positions in one-on-one situations with defenders, and he doesn't always, and I think that comes with goals. Strikers, obviously, they thrive on goals, but he doesn't always appear to have the confidence to use that speed with which to take on those defenders. That will, I think, will grow as he scores more goals. That will give him the confidence. Now, he's 24. You talk about him scoring for many years. That is not a pup. In soccer terms, he's not a young
middle-aged
player.
Man at that point.
And so those that talk about him having his best years ahead are right in a sense. When you talk of players emerging from the college system and via the draft, but MLS wants to be seen as one of the leading leagues in the world, and so that talent needs to be uncovered earlier, and those players peaking earlier, and of course holding that peak for longer. And let's not beat around the bush. 8 goals.
Yeah.
8 goals. Now, he is closing in on double digits, which was his aim at the start of the season. He's managed to find the net in a struggling side. But
you would hope it's upper double digits instead of lower double digits.
8 goals as a leading scorer, yeah, is still not good enough. Now, of course, it's been a struggle for the side this year. We know and we understand that. So to score 8 goals in a struggling side, you've got to kind of doff your cap at that. But 8 goals is not going to turn heads around the league, and it's not going to turn heads outside of the league. To be considered a top scorer, yes, of course, you have to score. You've got to score consistently high, and you've got to score consistently over a number of seasons. So
For me, you hope that with a confidence-building season, a record-breaking season, let's be fair, it's been a record-breaking season, but it's still not up in the Robbie Keane, Chris Wondolowski, Jovinko, and even, you know, you look at Diego Valeri, who's an attacking midfield player, mm-hmm. who is closing in on 20 goals for the season. So let's see how he can use the confidence and the base that he's built from 2017, and let's see him kick on in 2018.
Well, what about the performance against NYCFC? A great side. I mean, our second best team in MLS?
For the Rapids, again, and we've said this a number of times, particularly at home, a game, and it's a cliche, it was a game of two halves. They were far too passive in the first half. They were much better in the second half. But as I say, it's been a trait of this side in 2017 when they've allowed themselves to be bossed at home. That can't happen. And I think gone are the days when sides will come in here and allow themselves to be frustrated at altitude and worn down. They know, certainly at a mile above sea level, they know that their best chance of getting a result at altitude is to come out strong and to take the game to the Rapids in the hope that they can then, as New York City did on Saturday, they can bag a goal early and cling on. The Rapids obviously are very strong in the latter stages. I think Badgie's goal was the ninth goal scored this season in the last 15 minutes of a game by the Rapids, so strong in the latter stages. But as I say, certainly here at home, the big disappointment, I mean, obviously more points dropped at home, but the big disappointment is the fact that this is a Rapid side that hasn't always come out strong at the start of games, far too passive, and they're waiting to get kicked between the legs before they react. And they did react on Saturday, they reacted well, but as I say, it was a kind of needs must because they didn't start as strong as you would hope.
The thoughts of Richard Fleming on the recent game against New York City FC. We'll be right back.
Colorado Rapids 2018 season tickets are on sale now. Don't miss out on the action as the Rapids take the field for 17 home matches at Dick's Sporting Goods Park next season.
And it's Marlon Hairston in the blink of an eye. They're back on level terms. This is some contest.
Go to coloradorapids.com to find out about the exclusive season ticket member benefits, including meet the team party, game day experiences, and stadium discounts. Go to coloradorapids.com.
Welcome back to the Rapids podcast. The Rapids have six games left in 2017, a season in which homegrown defender Courtney Ford has steadily blossomed in MLS. I caught up with him after training earlier in the week.
Court, you're just on a roll now, I feel like. You're just getting in the groove of things. It looks that way from afar. Do you feel that way playing?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to get some consistency going, some games in a row, getting all the, you know, the rookie mistakes kind of out of there. But it's nice just being on the field consistently, and I feel like I'm getting on a roll. And it's definitely helped my confidence, and I feel like I can step out there and contribute and be a good player on the team.
Talk about rookie mistakes. I mean, which ones come to mind? And when you sort of look back at those and have time to analyze, what were those, why they come about, and how do you fix them in the future?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different little things that you can point out. Some of the stuff has to do with positioning as a center back. Some of the stuff has to do with on the ball. You know, in college, you don't have much of the ball. You're told to defend, keep the ball out of the back of the net. And then when you come to this level, you're expected to play out and have a little bit more of an attacking presence. So just a lot of the stuff in the mentality, the positioning and stuff like that, stuff that I've grown from and learned from. And then there's obviously a lot that I'm still working on and I'm still trying to improve.
You sort of play I call it a rather fantastic style of defending with big plays all the time. I mean, really commit yourself, and it's really effective. And that sort of basically puts you in the spotlight from a lot of other defenders, so that's why there's Rookie of the Year conversations around you. Has that always been your style? And two, have you heard of these Rookie of the Year conversations about you?
Yes and yes. To the second one about Rookie of the Year, you know, it's not really, my mind's not focused on that. I just want to focus on my development as a player and set myself up for a successful career, you know. And that comes from developing through every training session to learning and getting the experience I need on the field. And as far as the other one goes, it's just like you just have to approach it every day. And I think coming from a college team that's very defensive oriented, and they preach blocking shots, blocking crosses, keep the ball out of the net. It's just instilled within me, you know. But with that being said, there's a lot that I need to improve on technically and going forward as the attacking side of my game.
And so specifically, what are those things you think you need to improve on the most?
I think looking forward, you know, breaking lines as a center back, feeling comfortable taking your space, taking touches past forwards or wingers that are pressing you, and just being cleaner on the ball, you know. It's difficult to come in and play with these style of players, these class players, you know, even the Pirlos, the David Villas of the world. And compete with them, you know. So you have to be able to think one step ahead, and just the mentality piece of it, just staying on your toes, thinking forward, thinking what you're going to do before you get the ball, it's huge. So that tactically, as a defender, is huge on my list.
You know, Tim Howard said at the beginning of the season that he likes you at center back, he likes how you play, but you see the relationship obviously off the field and then on the field with Tim can be definitely different. How is your relationship with Tim Howard?
Yeah, it's great, you know, and I think I like that you said that because, you know, on the field it's professional, it's business, and he treats it that way. And then off the field, he can put your arm around you and help you out if need be. But I think that there's a huge difference between on the field and off the field, and he creates a great balance between that, and that's why he's a good captain.
You know, you've mentioned DU soccer a couple times. Struggling this year a little bit more than they did in past seasons. One of the bright spots was Akron, of course. You were there supporting DU. Dylan Cerna was there supporting Akron. You came out on top. Wagers, any sort of thing going on between you guys ahead of time?
Yeah, there were some small wagers.
Yeah. Like what?
$5.
$5?
Just small bets, yeah. just for banter. But
all right. So you're $5 richer now, but yeah. It must be a little tough watching the team sort of go through a little bit of transition after what was 2 and almost 3 years of so much success at the University of Denver.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always difficult when you lose a core part of your team. You know, we lost a lot of guys, a lot of good guys. 4 of us went professional. And with that being said, that's 4 leaders that the team is losing as well. So I think it's hard, and it's hard to be consistent every year. But I think that they're getting off to a rough start. I've been out and watched them a few times, and I think they're going to be fine. They'll make the tournament, and they'll make a good run.
The Colorado Rapids would like to invite you to the end-of-season awards gala at Burgundy Affair, presented by Audi. Join us for an evening of food, libations and celebrations on Tuesday, October 17th, hosted at the Sewell Ballroom in the Denver Center for the Performing Arts. This cocktail attire evening features a sit-down dinner alongside Rapids players, coaches and alumni, benefiting Kroenke Sports Charities community programs. Make your reservation today at coloradorapids.com.
Welcome back to the Rapids Podcast, presented by Advocare. We now take a look around the league where Dylan Gannon comes in to break down an interesting article?
Yeah, I'm not sure interesting does it justice. This is quite the hot take. Ahead of the U.S. Open Cup final, MLSsoccer.com put out a pretty interesting article saying that winning the Open Cup for New York Red Bulls would mean more to them than their supporter shield titles. My first thought was, what are they talking about? But they did bring up some decent points. The main one being that New York has never won a final, being that MLS Cup or the US Open Cup. So obviously that does mean something. And we'll be the first to admit that Americans love the playoff system. But is it really worth more than a supporter shield?
Well, I didn't think it was really up for debate either, but apparently it is. So let's debate it. It seems like there's a clear consensus that the trophy power rankings, all in quotes, when is followed in this order. All right, you ready?
Ready.
MLS Cup.
1.
1. Number 2, Supporters' Shield.
Yep.
Number 3, Open Cup. But I think over the past couple of years, you could see the Open Cup becoming more intense. I looked at 2015, Sounders and Timbers. Seattle ended up finishing the game with 7 players, because if you finish with 6, game's over at that point. Due to injury and red cards, which there were 74 of them. Of course, the most famous was the Clint Dempsey ripping of the official's notes. Daniel Radford was the referee, and that was a spectacle in and of itself.
Yeah, and remember, that was when Michael Azier got sent off at the same time, too. So, you know, every now and then we try to ask Michael about it.
If you know Michael Azier, and we saw him get sent off in New York City last year, not exactly, you know, that mean streak type guy.
I wouldn't use malicious as the word to describe Michael Azier. But
not
hey,
at all.
To each your own, right?
Yeah.
But again, you see Sporting selling out all of their Open Cup matches. So obviously the Open Cup is growing, you could say. But I don't see how anyone could really say that it's more important than the Supporters' Shield. If the Open Cup meant so much to all these people, then why are teams resting their players so much during it?
Mm.
It's simply because they want them rested up for the rest of the MLS season. And, you know, MLS Cup playoffs. And so they have a chance at winning the Shield.
Yep.
Therefore, the Shield's more important, right?
It really is. I agree. I had to play devil's advocate earlier. You must forgive me for that. I hate to be on the side of Satan. But come on, the Shield definitely takes precedence, without a doubt. I remember when we went into the locker room last year after the last regular season game, you never would have thought that these guys realized they went unbeaten at home. The opportunity to lift the supporter shield meant so much to them, and unfortunately, it just didn't happen.
Yeah, and that's what makes me kind of rethink our whole playoff system. Yes, as Americans, we love the playoffs. I mean, they make things exciting. They keep you on your toes throughout the entirety of it. But one could say that a champion is the one who excels over the entire course of a season, which is completely valid, and like you said, was evident last year when the Rapids finished just 2 points short of that supporter shield title. However, I still think that in order for MLS to thrive and grow here, they need to keep this playoff system. MLS Cup is what's going to get you views, you know, on TV and keep you engaged on the website and all of that here in the U.S. So in order for this league to grow, I think the playoffs have to stay for the near future.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe in a few years you can take a look at things, but you're right. Don't try and fix something that isn't flawed or incredibly flawed in this case and keep trying to generate some buzz. Those Cinderella stories are the ones that bring the fans closer to the game and the team. I mean, just Cincinnati comes to mind, obviously, with your Open Cup run, and then the U.S. women play in front of an amazing, raucous crowd there on this past Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So why not enjoy that and keep our league unique?
Right.
Dylan, you know what? I like this. Good job.
Good job to you.
No, that's good job to you, I insist. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Back after this. Are you in for 90? Enjoy a craft beer and a game courtesy of Odell Brewing in the Colorado Rapids.
What a wonderful goal from Dominic Badji, and he stings like a bee.
The Rapids take on Montreal Impact on September 30th at 7 p.m. at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
In the middle. Oh, he's done it again, you know. Would you believe it?
Starting at just $34, get a ticket to the game, a 90-shilling beer, and a Rapids t-shirt courtesy of Odell Brewing. Go to coloradorapids.com. That match is on September 30th, one of just three remaining home games, all of them in a row, upcoming here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. The others against FC Dallas and RSL. The Rapids head to Vancouver Whitecaps FC this Saturday, an 8:13 Mountain Time start before heading to Texas and a second trip to Frisco to face Dallas next Wednesday. Some other news around the league, over 70,000 watched Atlanta tie Orlando last weekend, the record attendance for a regular season MLS match, and they thought that it just wouldn't work in Atlanta. Elsewhere, and Jay Heaps was shown the door at New England Revolution on Monday evening after six seasons in charge. The 7-0 loss at Atlanta last week didn't help, though that cause not helped by two red cards for the Revs, both decided by video review in the first half. And Eric Palmer Brown is set to join English Giants Manchester City on a 4.5-year deal. Bad news for Sporting Kansas City and MLS, he will leave for free. Parting shot. This part of the Rapids podcast brought to you by Lunasul Tequila. Made using only the best ingredients and classic techniques. Lunasul Tequila, one sip and you know. Richard Fleming, what do you know?
Well, you may mention that Jay Heaps became the fifth coaching change within MLS this year, leading some to suggest that the, quote, seats are getting hotter across Major League Soccer. It's a new league high for the most coaches to be sacked in a single season. And that stat, or that suggestion, will raise a few eyebrows. But let's put this into perspective. I'm going to ask you a question here. Between May 2016 and May 2017, how many managers slash coaches were either sacked or departed by the old chestnut mutual consent across the four English divisions? So that's 92 clubs.
Sure.
How many? So within a year,
okay,
how many were shown the door?
So that's basically the end of the 2015-16 season, end of the 16-17 season. I'm going to go with...
Out of 92,
I'm going to go with 40.
Not bad. 47.
47.
47. Now, that doesn't include those that moved on to other jobs.
Right.
Those that resigned. Those that came to
sackings.
The end of contracts. Those are just sackings and mutual consent, which normally means that you jump or we're going to push you. So... that's more than half. The previous high in MLS was four coaches sacked. That was seen in 1998 and 1999. Now, indeed, one of those to go in 99 from the Revolution, by the way, was Walter Zenger. Yeah. That little spell that I just spoke about a moment ago, between 2016 and 2017, he lost his job as manager of Wolverhampton Wanderers. That was last October. But a number of things I was intrigued. I was there thinking, well, is MLS heading down the slippery path that Europe is kind of guilty of? But in 1998 and 1999, there were 12 teams in MLS. So a third of the coaches were sacked. Okay? 4 out of the 12. This year, 5 out of 22. So that's a lower percentage.
Right.
Although it's a higher number, it's a lower percentage in 2017. So a rather alarming approach to kind of insinuate that the position is now much more vulnerable. I think that's a misleading approach. And I would say this also, aside from Kurt Anelfo at LA Galaxy, the other coaches to sadly go this year all had a decent run. Now, it's never nice to see someone lose their job, but it's an industry, as we know, it's based on results, and most of those coaches have been given 2 to 3 years. So I don't have an issue with that in the main. The level of ruthlessness in the English game, and to be fair, elsewhere across Europe, is a path that MLS doesn't want to tread. And this is kind of a theme that we've had, obviously, Dylan with his piece earlier about Supporters Shield over Open Cup and MLS Cup. We all know Frank de Boer at Crystal Palace had 77 days in charge. He had 77 days in the job, but only four Premier League games before he was sacked. And that itself got me thinking, compare and contrast. How is Major League Soccer really becoming a hot seat? Look at these Premier League managers. This is over the course of the Premier League history. So some of these are back in the early 2000s that have been given little time. Les Reed at Charlton, 40 days. Renny Mullenstein at Fulham, 75 days. Bob Bradley, we know, he had the reins at Swansea for 84 days. Terry Connor, Wolverhampton Wanderers when they were a Premier League side, 91 days. And Derby County had Colin Todd in charge for 98 days. That's the hot seat. I mean, that really is the hot seat. And it's not something which sits comfortably with many in England. It's a side of the game which undoubtedly suggests that the sport is far too cutthroat, owners far too quick to pull the trigger. I'm glad that most in MLS give their choices a chance at a time where transfer windows make buying and selling and establishing the players that you want much tougher. You can't come in as a coach or a manager and bring in your players as and when. You have to wait for windows, you have to wait for opportunities, you have to wait for the roster space and the cap space. So sometimes it can take you a year or two to bring in, these are now my players, this is now my squad, so allow me now to work with these guys. If you bring somebody in, as they do in Europe, and offer them such little time, that itself calls into question the judgment of those hiring and firing, not necessarily all the time that the coach that they've appointed. Consistency is the key, and a little patience, and I think on this score, MLS is doing it right.
Now to some news from the Development Academy. The Colorado Rapids U14s went into their weekend encounter at FC Boulder, boasting a 3-0-0 record, 18 goals scored, none conceded. They emerged with an improved 4-0-0 record after crushing their hosts 14-0. 9 different scores contributed to the convincing result. The U13s made it 3 wins out of 4 for the season as they defeated FC Boulder 5-2. Not to be outdone, the U12s won 8-0 and 4-0 in their respective games against Boulder. All the DA teams play at Real Colorado Saturday, September 23rd. For the 18s and 19s, 16s, 17s, and 15s, this marks only their second game of the season. A reminder that the Rapids are on the road for the next two games at Vancouver on Saturday, FC Dallas next Wednesday. Rapids kickoff starts at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Saturday for an 8:13 start. Don't forget, you can always listen on the radio or online, altitude950.com, 950 over the air. Our coverage will begin at the top of the hour, 8 p.m. Mountain Time on Saturday from BC Place in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We'll also have highlights from Avs preseason action earlier in the day that day, so hopefully you'll join us on Altitude 950 for that. If you want to listen in Spanish, you can listen La Invasora, 87.7 FM. Then they tackle FC Dallas at Toyota Stadium on Wednesday. That is a 6 p.m. kickoff next week. For Dylan Gannon and Richard Fleming, I'm Connor McGehee. Thanks, as always, for listening. See how the Rapids fare in Canada for the second and final time this season. Talk to you next week. But that's it for now. Bye-bye.
The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.